Where Murder Meets Mystery contains graphic and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm trying to do what we came here to do.
Oh, hey, Ghoul friends. Let's take a walk down the street where murder meets mystery, a podcast exploring the murders, the mysterious, and everything that lies beyond the beyond. I'm your male podcast host, Trevor.
I'm Grace. Trevor decided it'd be fun to try crack today before.
Oh, let's go. Well, that was actually pretty coherent, what I just did.
You even said, let's go. That was actually really good. I understood that very
I don't know if we can come in hot like that, but
I think it's fine. Whatever, we'll keep it.
Yeah, whatever.
Everyone's gonna think that they're like, fuck, I pressed 2x speed. Damn it.
It's going by so fast.
Well, hey cool friends, welcome back. We're glad to talk at you again.
Welcome back. It's January. Hopefully there's not a blizzard where you live. Or if you live in the southern hemisphere, hopefully you're enjoying the summer, I guess. That's how that works. Yeah? You've never heard that?
No, I'm just...
There should just be a segment. Trevor tries small talk. Ends up sounding like an absolute unit.
Fucking dweeb.
You know what? Someday, one listener who lives in the southern hemisphere will fucking appreciate that.
Be like, yes! Finally! Some acknowledgement.
All our ghoul friends in New Zealand having a great time. Yes,
we actually have 2 ghoul friends in New Zealand.
I think you made that up.
I didn't.
There's no way.
It was on Anchor.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. I was like, how did you just recall that fact?
Well, it stuck out to me. You know how you recall stuff that's significant?
It is significant. It's where the Lord of the Rings was shot.
Oh, we were just talking about Lord of the Rings.
We were. It's all coming back.
It's all coming back to me now. Yeah. That was fucking good.
Yeah. Shout out to Elijah Wood.
Oh, no. Shout out to Celine Dion and her. Do you hear it? Did you hear this about Celine Dion?
What happened?
So she has this rare neurological disorder. They call it, I'm not kidding, they call it stiff person syndrome. And before you make jokes about it, I have to tell you what it is. Because I can see your face.
I'm withholding jokes. Continue.
Okay, no, it's fucking crazy. So it causes these involuntary spasms of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And these spasms can be excruciatingly painful and can be powerful enough to shatter bone.
Oh, ouch.
Isn't that terrifying? So it's kind of like tetanus. Like, it kind of sounds like tetanus, where you're like, your joints will lock up.
Yeah.
And anyway, she had to cancel her whole tour, like all her shit, because of this.
Could she not just sing from a bed?
Trevor.
What?
This It's a Wonderful Life. What are you talking about?
Or just like have her like propped up, and then if she needs to spasm, like a bed just comes and like swoops underneath her.
That's so fucked.
I mean, it's called money.
Well, that's the it's called money. Look it up. That's the whole point, is she can't predict that. I don't know why I'm validating what you just said with a response.
I'm just saying the riffs from a bone shattering spasm from Cher are probably pretty fire.
Fuck, it's Cher. We're not talking about Cher. We're talking about Celine Dion.
Same thing.
they all have that.
They occupy the same space in my mind, clearly.
Cher, Celine, and Shakira all have the same.
Well, there you go. That's why they occupy the same space.
Yeah, it's actually funny that you said that, because I do get them confused. Cher and Celine.
Yeah, my mind palace isn't ordered in alphabetical. It's ordered by how throaty their voice sound, I guess. Yeah.
Wow. This has become the horrible throaty covers podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to break out into Mongolian throat song eventually. So stay tuned for that.
So, Trevor, how was your weekend?
My weekend was pretty good. I got to go see my parents. That was cool. We had little early holidays. And girlfriends, if you haven't figured it out by now, I'm not keeping it a secret, but we're like recording ahead of time. So
yes.
Welcome to that. But yeah.
Not keeping it a secret.
Yeah, I ain't not keeping it a secret.
Fuck, time stamp.
Yeah, we don't have to call attention to it all the time, but I'm still gonna tell you about my week like it just happened. I'm not gonna be like, oh, I'm going to make believe what happens in January. No.
That was a weird sound.
Yeah, yeah. It's called aspiration. It's yeah, called gasping for air.
I need my inhaler, probably.
Oh, nah, you're good.
If the laughs continue.
I used to think inhalers were just for kids that, like, before they turned the age of 12, like, because their lungs weren't big enough. That was some conclusion I had came to. And because I was always kind of a husky lad, I was always like, my lungs are big. So that's why I don't need an inhaler.
Don't blame Trevor, he's illiterate.
I'm a doctor. But yeah, I had a good weekend.
Good. You know, I didn't have asthma because I didn't have asthma in college. If you'll just shut down. I said if you'll recall, I did not have asthma. But I got it when I was sick at the beginning of 2020.
You just collected it.
I was sick for like a fucking like a month. Yeah. And I started out with it with just a URI, and then it evolved into bronchitis.
Oh, that's close.
Yeah.
That's and one then, word off from a UTI.
Yeah, no, one letter. Yeah, not well, a UTI.
It's an acronym. So it is one word.
It's an acronym.
Actually, it's an upper respiratory or upper urinary.
Actually. Yeah, no, I had...
it's two words off. It's not upper tract infection. It's urinary. I'm awful. I'm illiterate.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, and I developed asthma from that. Now I still, when I laugh too hard, I get wheezy.
You do.
I do. I'd like start coughing, and if I'm laughing while lying down, which doesn't happen very often, but if I am, if I'm like on the if I'm like on the couch or something and I start laughing, I can't breathe. Like I'll start gagging. It's really terrible.
But
it started about 3 years ago. Super interesting. Fun fact about me. A lot of you have been asking about my inhaler routine.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, how was your week?
Oh my God, so it was so fun. My sister's birthday was on Friday. And so we celebrated that on Thursday, her birthday and
happy birthday, Grace's sister.
My birthday and Christmas present to her, cuz it was fucking expensive.
Was
a cooking class.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was so fun. We went and made fresh pasta. And
with the egg and the flour, and what do you get?
Yeah,
macaroni.
Yeah,
nice.
And we were paired up with this very, very nice couple. Shout out to Reed and Gavin. They were very sweet. I didn't tell them about the podcast. I should have. But anyway, we had fun making pasta, and our teacher was Italian, which was very cool. So it was a very authentic experience. So we made like a pesto pasta and a caramelized onion and Italian sausage meat sauce. And then we made a limoncello gelato, which was delicious. It was so fun. And I would totally do it again. If it wasn't $200 for two people, I would totally do it again. Yeah. The fucking arm and the leg. But it was a blast.
It's honestly not a bad side gig. Just teach cooking classes.
Like that's what I was thinking the whole time.
You're of particular ethnicity, and you're maybe your mom has a recipe. Maybe she doesn't. Maybe you just get one. I don't know.
Yeah, like I feel like I could teach a cooking class. Like I'm good enough at a few things that like, because there are some people who are fucking terrible at cooking. Like, you know, yeah. I like to think I'm better than 2% of the population at cooking.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking about this. It's not hard to be in the top 1% of something.
Hot take. Okay.
when the popu- like you're talking about the world's population, like it's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking that's from someone who lives in America, but like, you know,
that's very interesting. So what's 1% of 8 billion?
Shit. I can't do that in my head. Something about whenever it gets in the building in the billions, it's just like, duh.
Hey, Alexa.
Oh.
What's 1% of 8 billion?
1% of 8 million is 80,000. By the way, you can thank the driver. Well, it would be 80 million then, yeah.
Oh, 80 million. Alexa, shut up. This is now a math podcast. Anyway, so 1%
yeah.
of 8 billion is 80 million.
Yeah.
So I could assume, I would say, that I'm better than the whatever the rest is, 99% at something. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. That's all I'm saying is, like, it's not hard. Especially when you have a population of, like, 8 billion. Like, if it was just 100,000 people, it would be harder to be in the top 1%. But
well, that's
still,
true. Yeah.
It's still, you know, 1,000 people. Which is...
Okay, so in that case, I would say I'm probably in the top... I would say I'm in the top 10% of cooks in the world.
That's honestly, yeah. Yeah. I'd say I'm there too.
Because that includes children, right?
Right, 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 right.
Right.
Sorry, I malfunctioned.
I'm in the top 1% of cleaning.
Cleaning?
I'm great at cleaning.
But there's a lot of housekeepers out there.
But it's all like, yeah.
And honestly,
they don't make up 1% of the population, would you say?
Yeah. But you're behind them. Well, the passionate housekeepers.
Definitely. You're behind them.
You don't have the skill set and the
eat
experience.
A bag of dicks, okay? I clean whenever I'm stressed, and I'm stressed all the time.
Damn.
So you gather a lot of expertise.
That's true.
That amount of time.
Well, I'm glad your cooking class was fun.
Thanks. Hey,
canceled
you
for wanting
started?
To move past it and get started. Yeah, let's get started.
Oh God, that was funny.
Welcome to the pod.
Listen,
Grace.
This is
it's
my
time.
Mystery. Okay,
it's time for your mystery.
So,
I mean, your case. Sorry.
This is the story of a couple named Matthew Phelps.
Why are you saying this is a story? Because every time anyone ever says this is a story, I'm like, all about how.
A girl. Oh.
All about how my life turned upside down. I don't know the words.
What am I singing?
You're singing the story of a girl by, what was it, Third Eye Blind?
Yes.
To another song.
My share.
By Celine Dion. This is a story all about how my life got turned upside down. I've got shivering man's disease or whatever you said. Shaky cheese disease or whatever you said.
It's stiff person syndrome.
Stiff person. Why is it stiff person? Why isn't it stiff man? Because it's sexist?
Because stiff man syndrome happens. When
a lot.
When two people love each other very much.
You know what I'm in the top 1% of? Nothing. Go to your room. All right.
Oh,
let's keep going.
Okay. Yes. Matthew Phelps and Lauren Hugelmeyer. They both grew up in Kentucky, but had pretty different upbringings. Lauren grew up in a close-knit family and had a great relationship with her parents, Lori and Dale, and her sisters. She is described as very genuine, caring, and sweet, and she was very strong in her faith. She was active in her school, in her church, in her family, and generally was highly responsible and hardworking. Matt, on the other hand,
type A,
had a very, diligent, I would say.
Diligent, ambitious.
Matt, on the other hand, had a very different upbringing. He was the child of divorced parents. His dad was not in the picture. And his mom wasn't super stable. Like, she got remarried, like, multiple times when he was very young. And he actually was raised, majorly by his grandparents. Does that sound right?
I would just say primarily.
Okay. He was raised primarily by his grandparents. Okay.
Right.
When Matt was a teenager, he became an active drug user, abusing several substances, but cough medicine in particular. So,
so he's on the lean.
Right. Well, lean is cough syrup mixed
with
something else, right? Isn't it?
Well,
or is it just
codeine? The codeine and cough syrup. I think he mixed it with like alcohol, but don't quote me. I don't know what lean is. I know it's a drink.
Well, it's purple drink.
Purple drink.
No, so so he abused cough medicine in particular. His mother was concerned and ended up enrolling him in a Christian school, hoping he would turn things around. And he did. As far as his family could see, and as far as I know, Matt became more involved in his school and was taking his academics more seriously. He attended the same school as Lauren, which is where they met, but they were not super acquainted and they weren't in the same circles. So they kind of lost touch, but they never really were in touch. So I don't really know how to say that. They were like, they just were classmates, I guess.
Went to the same school, but they didn't know each other. Maybe mm-hmm. knew of each other, but
yes,
not know.
Yes, knew of each other, but they did not know each other. Yes. So years later, long after Lauren and her family eventually relocated to Raleigh, North Carolina, this actually would change. Matt slid into Lauren's Instagram DMs.
Whoa.
Oh, and the two began a relationship. The relationship became serious, and Matt eventually decided to move to North Carolina to be with Lauren. Lauren was very involved in her church, as I mentioned. She was actually a youth group leader. She was 29 years old at the time, and Matt was 28 when he moved to North Carolina.
That's not much older than we are. Don't know if you want to share that, but like, bruh.
Yeah. No, it's not.
We're in, like, close. Murder age now.
Awesome. We're in murder age?
Yeah. Where people start, like, losing it and killing That's people.
That's true. Oh, only one of us is married, so you have more cause to be worried than I do.
Really? You think married people are killed more often? Is that a statistic?
Well, I mean, they have someone with...
Well, you're also a woman.
That's true. I'm a woman who lives alone. But you're also... in a couple with someone with a big fat motive sleeping next to you every night.
I guess that's true. I should probably cancel those life insurances I have on myself.
Right? I don't know. Maybe we're let's just say.
I guess everyone is a motive.
Let's just say it's no contest, but we're equally statistically likely to be murdered.
Sure. Yeah. We don't have to have like a likely to be murdered pissing contest. It's
equally
good.
Statistically likely.
Yeah.
Equal doesn't go.
But honestly, I guess you know what? Everyone has a motive. I think that's a new saying. Everyone has a motive.
Everyone has a motive. Watch out.
Just whether or not you do it.
So true. Whether or not we act on it.
They're going to play this in court. All right, you can go ahead.
You have to have like a capacity for rage, I feel like, to kill somebody.
Right, yeah.
What is it? What do you think it is that you have to have? Like the people who have killed someone.
Mm.
All of you girlfriends who've killed someone.
I don't know.
Chime in the comments.
It's a weird thing being, not knowing what it's like to kill someone. And I mm-hmm. don't want to find out. But like not having that experience. I don't know. Maybe it's impulse. Maybe it's rage. Maybe it's hatred. I don't know.
Because I mean, like, I'm someone who has a temper problem.
Right.
But I would, like, I get very angry very easily, but I would not say, I doubt I have the capacity to kill someone.
Well, and you've been trained to, like, shake your hands and stomp your feet and all this stuff. But, like, if you were going to, like, reach out and actually harm someone, you've been, like, trained since you were young that it's not okay to hit people.
Right.
And so then it's like, well.
So I guess the capacity for what's right and what's wrong. You'd have to break past all of that. Wouldn't you say? Like just generally a moral compass. But then you see those people who are like seem totally normal and then they just like snap and kill somebody. It's crazy. I don't know. There are some people that argue you have to be in the middle of some sort of psychotic like break.
Something's got to push you over across a certain line, I think. Because I mean, humans aren't invincible.
Yeah.
So like certain circumstances can all align at the same time, and then all it takes is for someone just to like flip over and then it's done, or like snap, as you say, or just like act upon one impulse and not really think about it, I guess. But
I also feel like the psyche is very fragile. Like I feel like we're all subject to influence, some of us more than others, but like mm-hmm. I feel like you see these people who are generally considered to be stronger than average, which are like soldiers, and then they're kidnapped in a prisoner of war camp or whatever, and they're just like totally broken down.
Yeah.
Mentally. And it's like, that to me says that the human spirit is resilient, but like under enough pressure, it is fragile.
Right. Know? Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't know. It's a very interesting conversation that maybe we don't have time to have today.
Well, and I think it's a conversation that ends on both sides of us going, we think we have an idea, but ultimately we
don't. Right, like obviously we are not experts, but I was just curious what your thoughts were.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't think we really know.
About your thoughts as well, not just my own thoughts.
Yeah, I was curious
about my thoughts as well.
So anyway, okay, so Matt had a very different upbringing. They knew of each other, but did not know each other. They reunite via Instagram, and they pursue their relationship full-time in person, okay? Now, Lauren's family was accepting of Matt generally, but her dad was not so sure. Dale was not having any of Matt's shit. He said, no, okay? He was hesitant about the relationship because it was moving too fast, and he just generally had a bad feeling about
Matt. And this is her dad?
Right, Lauren's dad. One night, this is so fucking funny. Okay, one night, all of Lauren's family was gathered together, and I think it was like a game night.
Okay.
And Matt, they're all just kind of talking, and then Matt suddenly tells all of them that he was married before.
Oh, cool.
But like none of them knew. And I don't think, nice. As far as I can tell, Lauren didn't know either.
Yeah, but so, like, my mic drop.
He just like tells everyone. And then just kind of like tries to shake it off, and everyone's like, hello. And they start pressing him with more questions. And he's just like, won't answer the questions. And is just kind of like not giving them information. And like the family just describes this moment as super awkward and
that
weird.
That is incredibly weird.
So weird.
It's like a intrusive thought that he just like lets slip out of his mind.
Imagine.
I've been married before. Okay. Yeah.
Anything else to say? No? Okay.
You've been married before, huh?
And his ex-wife, her name is Brooke. We'll talk more about her later. Okay. So after this, things are like, everyone kind of like gets over it and moves on. And Dale said, nah, fuck that. Okay. Dale is still hung up on it. And things are pretty much like from that point to like the point I'll talk about later. Things are so awkward between Dale and Matt. Like, they just do not get along because Dale's like, I don't trust him. I don't like him. I don't whatever. He has a feeling from the beginning.
Dale's bullshit meter flew off the rails.
Yes, exactly. When Lauren and Matt got engaged in 2015, they had an engagement party with all of their friends and family. Now, very controversial, but Matt's mother was trying to start some shit at the party. Mm. Okay. She shows up to the party in a white dress, which is like main no-no of wedding things, is you do not show up wearing white.
Yeah, classic.
To a wedding.
Classic fuck up.
All of Lauren's family and Lauren seem convinced that Matt's mother did not like Lauren and were concerned about how she was treating her. And just in general, they thought the white dress thing was not a mistake and it was an accident. Now, this woman was married several times. So like, she knows. The couple gets married in 2016. After they get married, Lauren actually is working several jobs, which I think makes a little more sense later, and I'll talk about why. But for Matt, it was not so easy. He had a hard time holding down a job and was changing career paths often. Matt's mother continued to be an issue. And there was this one incident that they talked about in the video that there was like a family photo shoot. I don't know if it was for just for like family portraits of Matt's family. And Lauren was invited by Matt's mother, but Matt's mother told her that there was a theme that they were all going to be dressed in blue. They were all wearing all blue outfits.
Love that.
And so Lauren picked out all blue outfits for herself and Matt, and they show up to the photo shoot, and all of the men are wearing blue, but all of the women are wearing white.
Oh, cool.
And so everyone, including Lauren, is convinced that Matt's mother did this on purpose. And so they like call her out the day of at the event. They're like, what the fuck? Right?
Yeah.
Did this on purpose. She gets so fucking mad and she's like, fuck everyone. And she cancels the whole photo shoot. Like, oh my God. Which like say that you're guilty a little louder, you know, like,
or God just damn. Like, calm down.
Right.
If you messed up, you messed up. But if you meant to do it, then it's like,
Right. And she was just basically could not believe that her whole family was turning on her. And they were, she's like, it's not my fault that Lauren is stupid and can't follow directions. Basically.
She's like, look, look, Lauren's dumb.
Right. Exactly.
Like, and then she's like, well, you told me this. And she's like, no, no, I didn't.
Right. So on the outside, like, despite the problems with her mother-in-law, on the outside, Lauren's marriage to Matt seemed to be in a good place. I mean, they were like, she was very active on social media. She was involved with an MLM. That was one of her jobs.
Love that.
And so she was very active on social media and constantly posting photos of the two of them and selfies and whatever. And so it seemed like they were in a good place, but their marriage actually had a lot of issues. And this all kind of reached a climax. September 1st, 2017, around 1 a.m. Okay. Matt.
Okay, so like after midnight, early morning.
Yes. So early in the morning on September 1st, 2017. Yeah. Matt Phelps calls 911 and he tells the dispatcher that he had taken some cough medicine the night before and that he was concerned that he took too much. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But he took some cold medicine. He fell asleep. He had a really weird dream. He woke up. He's in bed. He's covered in blood. There's a bloody knife next to him. And his wife, Lauren, is dead on the floor.
Oh, nice.
And he says, I did it. He thinks he did it.
Oh, wow. So he's like setting up full on, I hallucinated and
that's killed what, my yes. wife. That's what he is implying, that he was high on cold medicine and killed his wife in his sleep.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. So I'll post a link to the 911 call, by the way, on the episode, because I think that it's long to read on here or play on here, but I think that it's worth a listen if you're just, because I want you guys to kind of form your opinions for yourself, but I think it's really strange. And he just seems like generally, he seems like he's crying on the phone call, but it seems fake. And this is, okay, so this is one of those situations. It's the same when I look at a mugshot and I'm like, oh, that person's terrifying. Is that just because I know they're a criminal or is that because they're actually terrifying? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The hindsight bias.
Well, yeah, it's like if you see them beforehand, you might have a different opinion about them.
Or confirmation bias, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the same thing here. Is it just, is the 911 call just weird because I know that he is guilty and like he did it? Or is it weird because he's weird and it's sketchy and I'm using my powers of deduction?
Yeah, no, that's weird. It'd be a good question for a 911 operator because, I mean, they just like stumble upon things, get called in.
That's true.
And then you just hear it and you're like, okay.
Now, we'll talk about when the officers get to the scene. They recall Matt's behavior is very strange. Like, he's super calm. Okay. They get there. They see the cold medicine just like sitting out in the open and in an otherwise clean house. So this strikes them as odd and it seems very staged. Like, it seems like he placed it there so that they would see it when they walked in, you know? Mm-hmm. Second to that, he's pretty much clean. Like, he has a little blood on his face and he has some blood on his feet.
Right.
But he doesn't have blood on his clothes. Like, he doesn't have a lot of blood on his clothes. There's no splatter
on him, right? Himself.
Right. And when they take Lauren to the hospital. So Lauren, by the way, I want to mention, describe the scene a little bit, and it's brutal. Lauren was found lying in the fetal position. She had ripped out clumps of her own hair and was holding them. So this indicates, this is actually not, it's not the first time that I've heard about this happening in a stabbing, but like, apparently it's a reflex when you're just like hysterical and thrashing around. I mean, this was clearly a violent attack and it's even possible there were some indication that she was tortured beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So just like violent murder, right?
Yeah.
But so if you are high on cough syrup, you have to be fucking stony baloney to do something like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, and not and have no memory of it. Like,
yeah,
he's only saying he did it because he woke up and the knife was there, according to his story. He has no memory of this, of doing this, according to his story.
Right.
So anyway, so I mentioned he has very little blood on him. This is unusual because Lauren is taken to the hospital, pronounced dead at around 1:45. She had 123 stab wounds.
Yeah, no, that's weird. That's it's weird for him to like hallucinate and say that he woke up in a pool of blood or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then just to be clean when they get there. Like, did he take a shower?
Right. Cause he said he was covered in blood. Right. And he said the bed was all. So this would later indicate, and police are stricken by how clean he is, especially after having confessed to killing his wife. Like, they're all stricken by how clean he is.
Right.
And, they say that it's likely that he cleaned up before they got there, or actually before the 911 call was even placed, because on the 911 call, you can hear that the officers are there. They're coming in while he's on the phone.
Gotcha.
So like the fact that he likely cleaned up, and we'll talk more about that later, but 123 stab wounds. Okay.
Yeah, that eerily. Takes some time.
Yeah. And some exertion too. Like it's laborious, I think, is right. The word I'm looking for.
It's not easy.
Somebody. It's not easy. Someone, I saw something that compared it to, what was it? Like it was some sort of food that they were comparing it, maybe like a meat, like steak or something like that. It was that they were comparing it, like how, like the effort it takes to stab someone. It was on some forensic show I was watching. And yeah. I don't remember what it was, but it's not easy, is my point, for many reasons. But physically, it's not easy. Eerily enough, when officers arrive to Lauren's parents' house to tell them the devastating news, Lauren's mother, Lori, asked them if it was Matt, saying she just had a feeling. Matt was taken into custody, but like I said, had very little blood on him. Furthermore, he seemed lucid and sober, and when they tested his blood, they found out that he had taken slightly more than the recommended dose, but not nearly enough to render him intoxicated.
Right.
And the video I was watching, Kendall Ray, she's a true crime YouTuber. She was talking about how the company, Coracetin, Cough and Cold, actually did a study following this case and saying, like, in this study, nobody experienced the impacts. And like in the history of the medicine, there have been no violent crimes committed while under the influence of Coracetin. So like basically they were just like, no, it's not possible.
Right. This is an isolated incident.
Yeah. And specifically on the amount that he was on. Right.
Right.
It's not like he took fucking bath salts or some shit. Like it's, you know, it's cough medicine. Anyway.
Yeah. And like you said, you have to be like super messed up to hallucinate and then kill someone.
Exactly.
And stab someone 20 times.
Like you, it's not just the cough medicine. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you have to be super fucking stoned.
Yeah, like hallucinating. Like you have to be
not just stoned,
under
out
some
of your
strong
mind.
Hallucinogenics. Yes.
So, because you hear about people doing this, but it's on like PCP or bath salts or some crazy thing that makes you see like, or like any cocktail of drugs, like where it's you're mixing substances. Like you hear about stuff like that happening, like. When bath salts first like entered the mainstream and that homeless guy ate the person's face. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
In Florida? I think it was in Florida. Yeah. It's always in Florida.
Right. It's always in Florida. But I don't know. It is weird. Like, I don't know how it has to be hallucinogenic. And I don't know if you can hallucinate or how much cough syrup you need to take.
I don't know.
Hallucinate. And it's got to be like the over-the-counter stuff. Like, I wouldn't think, or I mean, it's got to be like the prescription stuff that actually has like painkillers in it, right?
Yeah.
In order for
like
it to really do much.
Yeah.
But yeah, because like over-the-counter, like NyQuil and stuff, I don't know if that really messed you up. Like, you just.
And they were saying based on the.
Down a bottle
level
of NyQuil and
system.
You kill someone?
Like, right.
I don't.
They were. Now, granted, he was a seasoned drug user, but. So his tolerance is likely higher than other people, but like based on the amount he had in his system, they were saying like, and how sober he appeared and was acting, like he could have driven a car.
Okay.
Would have been fine. Well. So like, that's not the level of under the influence that you're killing somebody and not recalling it. So.
Gotcha. Well, what did the investigation yield?
So yeah. So when all is said and done, they do charge Matt with Lauren's murder and they swiftly take him into custody. As the investigation progresses, they discovered there were a lot of problems in their marriage. One problem was dealing with some jealousy. So Matt had it in his head that there was something going on between Lauren and this guy, David, in their church. Okay.
Okay.
This caused many arguments during which Matt accused her of cheating and revealed that he was sensitive about the issue because his ex-wife had cheated on him.
Oh.
Matt's ex-wife has since denied this. Her name's Brooke, saying her problems with Matt were due to abuse on his end, which I'll talk about later, infidelity on his end, as well as financial problems and a lack of contribution from Matt.
Dang.
Speaking of money, many of Matt and Lauren's problems were also finance related. They were fighting a lot over money, especially in the months leading up to Lauren's death, in particular about Matt's spending, and he was even stealing money out of Lauren's purse. Okay.
Oh, that's scummy.
Yeah. So they had a place where they were saving and collecting. They were both big nerds and they loved Star Wars and Harry Potter in particular. But they were saving up for a trip to Universal and Disney World. And they had, I guess I'm going to assume like a jar or a box where they were collecting money. And Matt took all of this money and spent, it's like thousands of dollars that he spent at Best Buy.
Oh, wow.
So he like took all the money that they were saving for their trip and spent it.
That's crazy.
It seems likely that Lauren may have also been bailing Matt out of financial trouble, or that he was stealing from her bank account as well. Because at the time of their marriage, Lauren had about 10 grand in the bank, which is a decent amount for a woman her age. And at the time of her death, her savings had dwindled to less than 1,000. So she was really, really stressed about money.
Right.
And she shared this with her mother, and this is when her parents became involved in their finances and came in to manage their spending, which I'm sure that this was hard on Dale.
This is definitely probably hard on the parents and as well as like Matt. Like, that's got to be awful.
So they came in to help them like financially plan and deal with some benefits, budgets and stuff like that. And Matt seemed open to everything they were suggesting, but there was nothing to indicate that Lauren was not optimistic.
Oh.
So this, on the night of August 31st, which is the day before the murder, Lauren is cooking dinner after work, and this is something she did regularly, but she's making dinner for her and Matt. Matt's home, and someone shows up to the house, a woman of their age named Valerie. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And Lauren didn't really see what was going on. She's kind of in the kitchen, but she hears Matt say, "Hey, honey, I'm leaving. Valerie needs my help with something."
Oh.
And that's all he says. And we still don't know who it was. And like, they never really confirm it, but he leaves and she's like about to have dinner. So she's on the phone with her sister when this happens. And she basically tells her sister, like, "I'm fucking pissed because I made dinner for him and he's leaving."
Right.
And then he texts, she's waiting for him to start, like she's waiting to start eating until he gets back. And he texts her and says, like, "I'm having too much fun with Valerie. I'm not coming home."
Oh, fun.
And she texts her sister and says, "It's over. I'm done with him. He's bringing me down. He's ruining my life. I'm over it."
Oh, well, I mean, he's going and hanging out with other chicks. It's
right.
Weird.
Especially when he's accusing her of infidelity. I mean, are you kidding me? And if given the past infidelity in his previous marriage, it's not unlikely that that's what was going on.
So what kind of text messages? "I'm having too much fun with Valerie. I'm not coming over to
you." Yeah, I thought that was super weird. My guess is that he was doing drugs. I don't know. Like, doing something.
I don't know.
That wouldn't, she's, you know, super, super Christian. So like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was hiding something like that from her, you know?
Yeah.
So
maybe
he was, and I forgot to mention this, but he was actually studying to be a pastor.
Oh, like in seminary school or something?
Yeah. And so like, it makes his behavior even all the more unusual. And we'll talk a little bit more about like some problematic things that he did outside of the murder.
Okay.
So it turns out that their seemingly happy marriage during this, Lauren was having serious doubts, even expressing these to her family and making it clear that she wanted to make it work because her faith would indicate that she wanted to stay in the marriage. Let me see. Now, I mentioned earlier that Matt's ex-wife accused him of abusive behavior, and this is verified during Matt's interrogation when he said he had been, quote, unknowingly abusive to his ex-wife. I don't know for sure, but this seems to imply that he is blaming the abuse on his being under the influence of some sort of substance. That's what it seems like to me. And actually, their marriage came to an end when in one episode, like, there were a number of domestic violence calls to the household, to that household. And there was one episode where he like jumped on her and pinned her to the floor, and she left him after that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So for him to be like, she cheated on me, that's fucked, you know?
Yeah, that's messed up.
Officers also talked to a neighbor of Matt and Lawrence, who told them that while her and Matt's relationship was platonic, they spent a lot of time talking about their shared struggles with anxiety and depression and had formed kind of a friendship. She began to back away and distance herself from Matt when he began talking about death often, and he started joking about stealing her gun and killing someone.
Oh.
During the investigation, it comes up that Matt was very interested in the movie American Psycho, and he had actually had a secret Instagram account. Secret, by secret, I mean secret from Lauren. That discussed dark subject matters, contained a lot of references to the movie, as well as conveyed themes of Satanism.
Okay, so he's super weird.
Yeah. And I mean, it's understandable why he would keep that secret from Lauren, who's like super Christian. And if he's studying to be a pastor, it's just like clearly he was dealing with a lot.
Yeah, it's also super weird for anyone to fetishize any of that stuff. Like, I don't know.
Now, the kind of the smoking gun, if you ask me, besides the bloody knife and him confessing, is the post right before Lauren's murder. And he basically said, it posted a selfie of himself.
Oh, I love that.
A selfie of himself, for fuck's sake. A selfie. And said, everyone thinks I'm a serial killer. # found an angel to kill.
Oh.
Yuck. Matt's search history was also, I love search history. Oh my God. Was also a point of contention during the trial because he had Googled questions about the cold medicine and its effects, but the prosecution actually used this in their favor. And they actually said that even though that this was meant to be used as probably a defense for Matt, saying like, hey, I was clearly worried about hallucinating or worried about being loopy or whatever. Right. And the prosecution argues that a seasoned abuser of cough medicine would not need to Google this information, and that it's further evidence of the intent and forethought as well as Matt's intention to cover his tracks.
Yeah, it sounds like he wanted to read up on it and see if there was anything about it that he could, you know, leverage for himself.
Right. Now, I would assume, this is a random question, but like when you're conducting a search on a search engine, does it record the time that you searched that?
Like
the
maybe.
Is it your
search history, like when you access the website, probably.
Yeah.
Probably a timestamp.
It makes me wonder if just like Googling things, if it puts a timestamp on that.
Probably.
Because that would seem like pretty straightforward. Like you could.
Because it knows when you recently did something. So if it.
I know it knows like the day or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point too. Anyway, they seem to think that he did this in order to cover his tracks. So either way, it was before the murder. So we know that. But anyway, I was just curious. I mentioned earlier that police believed Matt had likely cleaned himself up before police arrived, likely before the 911 call was even placed. This is corroborated when a luminol test of Matt and Lauren's bathroom finds traces of blood everywhere.
Okay.
So the luminol test, the history of abuse, the drug use, the Instagram posts, the money problems, all of this is used to reach a pretty speedy conclusion to the trial. On October 5th, 2018, the trial ended. Matt took a plea deal. Matt took a plea deal, they usually do, and was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, Lauren's family has reflected on the horrific end to their daughter's life, recalling a number of red flags that they feel like they should have seen that would indicate Lauren was being abused. So they actually think that he was abusive.
He was physically abusive towards her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And financial abuse, by the way, is abuse. That is, it's a type of domestic violence, is like stealing from your partner and like, you know, causing destructive behaviors that harm your shared finances and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Like I go and drop like all of my life savings on, you know, gambling or something, that's got to be.
Can you imagine?
That's a terrible, terrible time.
It makes me sick. Yeah. So they have made it their mission to bring awareness to domestic violence and encourage friends and family members to reach out if they have concerns about someone they love being abused. But overall, just like really a sad story and so weird. And I know I shook it up with a closed case, but.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, still. No, it's still weird. 120 stab wounds. It's
123.
Yeah.
That's what they call overkill, right? And I've talked about that before on the podcast, but overkill is basically like where you commit a fatal act against somebody past the point of killing them.
Right, like they're dead and you just continue to
stab
them. Correct. But at least there's no parole and everything and he's behind bars.
That's true.
I feel sorry for Lauren's family. It must be terrible to feel like, well, we could have done something.
Yes.
And we had the feelings that it was bad, but then we just never did anything about it. It's sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so really sad one. Womp womp. Sorry.
Womp womp. That's okay.
You have something interesting.
I do. It's interesting. It's either going to be, I'm hoping that we can make it funny, but today we're talking about the Men in Black conspiracy.
What? I'm excited. Yeah. That was a crazy noise.
What?
What?
Yeah, Men in Black conspiracy. And I'm not talking about the 1997 film Men in Black where Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones star as two, Men in Black, right?
Right, of course.
To kick aliens' ass and stomp that bug. You've ever seen it. I love about that movie. Just quick side note about the movie. The thing I love about the movie is the guy, the antagonist, the big bug guy that crawls inside the farmer and just like walks around and he's just like, oh, you know, it's just like, it's funny. And they're like, put your hands up. And he's like, oh, okay. And he like rips his skin off. And it's hilarious.
I've seen that movie once and it was so long ago.
It's terrifying when I was little, but when you rewatch it, you're like, oh, this guy's acting is crazy. I can't speak on Men in Black 2 or 3 as if how good they were. I think Men in Black 2 was pretty cool, but I don't remember very much about them.
Marissa has mentioned this conspiracy before, and she didn't talk about it, but she's mentioned it, and I'm very interested to know more. So
Men in Black are... basically, it's not what I was saying about the movie, but they are kind of like an evil organization. And this is according to people who follow like UFO culture and like generally conspiracy theorists, because it is a conspiracy. But it's funny that Marissa has talked about them before. Well, it's not really funny, but it's interesting because they're related to such organizations such as like the Illuminati or people who are said to be working for the New World Order.
Yeah.
The
New World Order is those are the people who built the Denver airport. That one.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that whole thing. Like people who are like silently twisting and turning the gears and the knobs to try to push us forward to the New World Order, and that we'll all be like eaten by lizards and whatever.
Awesome.
No, I've got a couple stories of people that had seen the Men in Black after we kind of defined them a little bit. But the Men in Black are said to be related to organizations such as the Majestic 12 and the New World Order. A little bit about the New World Order thing. It's a common theme in conspiracy theories that a secretive, like powerful elite people or elite group with like a globalist agenda they're actively conspiring to rule the world. Basically through like combining or conquering all of the nations and making like a one world government, basically. Eventually. Yeah. That's the whole New World Order thing. Majestic 12, however, is directly linked to the Illuminati. So the Illuminati and the New World Order, they draw from each other. And I'm sure people like mix them up. But I think that they may be separate or they may be similar. I'm not sure. I need to do just like a whole thing on the Illuminati, I guess, and the concept of New World Order. But Majestic 12 is a branch of the Illuminati next to the Bilderberg Group and was founded around the time of the 20th century in 1947. I didn't look up what the Bilderberg Group was, but I'm guessing it's like
Bilderberg. That's what I keep thinking.
Yeah, the Bilderberg Group, the Illuminati. That there's a reason why you put the heart in the bear. It's someone's soul.
So they put real hearts in the bears.
Yeah, pretty much. But I guess the whole thing about the Illuminati is that they split into multiple groups, and Majestic 12 had become a certain branch of the Illuminati that was the leader of the technology and communications, and were given technologies to control both legal and illegal drug distribution. Whatever all that means. Anyway, they're basically saying that Men in Black are related to this, and we'll get into that going forward. Okay. But the Men in Black's primary role in every instance of people seeing them is basically just kind of like suppress public knowledge of like alien visitation. Or yeah. If you see something you're not supposed to, they just show up and they don't like whip your ass because like they're seldomly violent.
It's not just aliens, right? It's like meant to be like anything supernatural or like just what you said, you're not supposed to see it.
Yeah, it could be like governmental things. Sorry, I thought Tilly was behind me. Yeah, I just like slowly turned around, like a Men in Black in my room. But
you went, yeah, it's like something you're not supposed to. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, sorry, Eagle friends. I'm getting freaked out. My wife's home. Hey, Scarlett. Anyway, she was gone. She just came back, so I'm hearing rummaging downstairs. So that's why I thought there was a Men in Black in my house. Anyway,
rummaging, of course.
But yeah, Men in Black often like they don't hurt people. Typically, they're said to be like they come to the homes of those who have publicly talked about aliens or UFOs, and they do some sort of intimidating by either asking them uncomfortable questions or like something will happen in their life and they're like, "Oh, that must have been the Men in Black that made my grandma fall down the stairs or something." So it's a lot of people who are a little scary or a little scared, but they're often said to be alien or mechanical in mannerisms. So like very odd.
Oh, like they're robots or something?
Yeah, robotic or like, you know, hello human. This is how an alien or this is how humans talk. Like, you know,
right. Like just like Garth Brooks.
Yeah, like Garth Brooks, basically filling out stadiums in a stadium near you.
Or fucking Mark Zuckerberg. They're both lizard people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, honestly, yeah, the description of Men in Black is like pale, very strange complexion, very weird way of talking, and like tall with like dark eyes, and it's like, that's Mark Zuckerberg.
Have you seen that video of Mark Zuckerberg roasting the pork butt or smoking it in his backyard?
Smoking the meats. Smoked meats, yeah. It's honestly kind of terrifying because it gives unsettling. Like robot or alien trying to fit in.
Yeah,
I like the Photoshop pictures or headshots of him that have just like the eyes darkened out really really well. So it's like his pupils and stuff are still there. Like it's not just like someone went into paint and blacked out the eyes.
Yeah,
but they just look super just awful and and Uncanny Valley. Like, have you ever heard of that?
No,
I don't know why. Heard about the Uncanny Valley?
I laughed like that when I don't know what you're talking about.
The Uncanny Valley is like, it's like stuff that, so like sex dolls or like robots that are supposed to like look like humans. Our brains recognize them as we can recognize that they're not human because they're in that weird, space where they have an uncanny resemblance to humans, but they don't exhibit like human
mannerisms. Humanoid.
Yeah, so you can, it's the kind of like the unease that they put you with. Like if you're in a room with a mannequin that looks a little too lifelike, then you're like that's kind of nasty.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that's like, you know that robot Sophia? That's like
isn't this supposed to be like really technologically advanced?
She's so advanced, and like they make her laugh and like do this little like where she blinks, like she'll blink like one eye at a time, and then like she'll have like these body language, and she can make like 36 distinct facial expressions.
Yeah, so and like it's just not enough because she's still creepy,
right? And then like they said, so like she was on Jimmy Fallon.
Oh no!
And he was saying something to her about like he made a joke, and she goes, and like did like a half laugh, and it was the most terrifying thing. I have nightmares about that little like half
awful.
Smile.
That's awful.
It's
if they
so
don't,
scary.
If they don't like our jokes, then why did we create them?
Right. That's such a good point. That it, they turn out, it turns out the creator of Sophia hates Jimmy Fallon and wants him
it's
to
is just like
hate
a
himself.
Huge, has a terrible sense of humor or no sense of humor.
Or Mark Zuckerberg. Or it's this is a Rick and Morty episode waiting to happen. But like Jimmy Fallon goes home and has this whole like shame spiral about how the robot didn't laugh at his jokes and
God.
Questions everything.
He should question everything. The
Aww,
big goober.
I love Jimmy Fallon.
How dare you, Jimmy? Aww. Get better. Write your own jokes, you hack. Anyway.
Oh my God. What the?
Oh, you can timestamp that. My bad.
You don't like Jimmy Fallon? I love Jimmy Fallon.
Nah. Yeah, he's pretty great. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess he's a comedian in and of itself.
I mean, I like Conan. If I had to pick a late night host, James Corden can go die. He's one of those robot people too.
So I think that's my problem with him is it's like, they all seem like robot people because they're scripted, maybe, or like they're just not good at like making themselves feel approachable or like attainable, but like it's approachable, personable.
I don't know. Real. I feel like Jimmy Fallon plays himself on that show. Like he's not like Stephen Colbert where he's playing a character.
Yeah.
Like I feel like he plays him. Like he to me seems the most genuine out of the hosts because like right. he plays. Every broken character on SNL that he like he just is a big goofball and he just like laughs and like is having a blast. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't seem fake. I like him, but I understand that he's controversial, especially among people who like comedians. He's like, they view a talk show host as like, you failed at comedy.
Well, he's better than Sophia, so.
Yeah, that's true.
No worries.
anyway, Men in Black.
People,
sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good. Some people believe the Men in Black are aliens in disguise who arrive in order to try to cover up their own tracks. This is claimed to be like a valid explanation as to why they show like little to no human emotion, as well as their ability to appear and vanish almost at will.
Mm-hmm.
However. I don't know. I'm thinking they could be aliens. I don't know. But
they seem to me more like robots, like cuz the assumption is that they work for the government, right?
Yeah, and some people believe that the Men in Black are machines, like android or humanoid robots, which also explains their lack of human emotions as well as, you know, the weird mannerisms. So they're just like Sophia clones, like they're like the Sophia 3.0.
Yeah.
One of the most popular theories is that the Men in Black are government officials or conspirators sent to the home of individuals deemed a threat to the New World Order.
Yeah.
And that would explain why Men in Black stories involve them intimidating people rather than actually killing or assaulting them.
Is that what you think?
No.
That they're government.
Not anymore.
Why can't I fucking stop it? Whoever made a joke and I made him do it again, and now he's salty.
Only a few people have encountered the Men in Black if they have seen or studied UFOs or cryptids linked to UFOs. So basically, if you listen to our podcast, you might be, you know, approached by Men in Black.
Good.
Because we, you know, talk about UFOs and shit all the time.
True. We do.
But don't fear, don't be afraid, because they're non-violent. They're just gonna, you know, basically threaten you.
I thought they did beat
and,
people up. They do
no,
in the
they
movie.
Just, they just like threaten you and intimidate you, basically saying that if you like tell anyone of what you've seen or heard, they'll either arrest you or make you disappear. Like, you know, like mafia boss make you disappear. So it's just intimidation.
You'll be sleeping with the fishes.
Yeah, sleeping with the fishes. Have some concrete shoes.
Sound like Prison Mike in The Office.
People who, like, ufologists, people who study UFOs, also have claimed that, like, their studies had been destroyed or deleted by Men in Black.
Mm.
It's possible that the Men in Black are hackers and are able to break into people's houses without leaving a trace in order to, like, delete studies and everything, get
mm-hmm.
people who have information, delete that information or transfer it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got a couple of, like, first-hand accounts, so eyewitness reports.
Okay.
One is from Dr. Herbert Hopkins. I don't know who he is, but he was working on a consultant He was working as a consultant on a UFO case in Maine. So he's involved with UFOs. No wonder the men in black came to his house. Anyway, one evening he received a phone call from someone purporting to be an activist in the UFO community, asking him if he could visit Hopkins to discuss the case. Only minutes later, the man arrived. The man was wearing a black suit and a black tie and had a very unusual facial appearance like Mark Zuckerberg, with no hair or eyebrows, and an extremely pale figure. Hopkins' dog began
barking. No hair or eyebrows, so it's Garth Brooks. It's not...
Yeah. Or, it's just pale, no hair, eyebrows, as to, like, maybe they've been underground for a while and all their hair rotted off.
It's Mark Zuckerberg and Garth Brooks' slithering, slimy love child.
Canoodling. Hopkins' dog was, like, barking erratic the minute the guy got in the house. Like, the dog knows. Basically, after the Men in Black finished questioning him about the UFO case, the visit got even stranger. The Man in Black informed Hopkins that there were two coins in Hopkins' pocket, which was correct, and asked him to remove one out of the pocket. So take one out. Hopkins complied and held the coin, a shiny new penny, in the palm of his hand.
Ugh.
The Man in Black told Hopkins to watch the coin closely. After a few moments, he reached behind Hopkins' ear and pulled out another coin. It says, look, there's your coin.
Is he fucking Chris Angel?
No, I made that up because this is what it sounds like.
It really does sound like a magic trick.
I know. It's like, got your nose. But anyway.
Oh my God.
I was just like, why am I reading this? That's sounds wild. So anyway. Funny. So he told him to watch the coin closely, and after a few moments, the penny took on a silvery appearance, and then appeared to be going out of focus, and then it began to fade and eventually disappeared altogether.
Mm-mm, don't like that.
So, like, it was just in his hand, and then it, like, silvered out and, like, faded.
Ooh.
The Man in Black informed Hopkins that the coin would never be seen on this plane again. He then inquired as to whether Hopkins was familiar with alleged UFO abductee Barney Hill. Hopkins replied that he had heard of Hill, but was under the impression that he had died in the not-too-distant past. Before we go on, Barney Hill, what you know about him?
That was an episode. Barney and Bonnie?
Yeah, Barney and Bonnie Hill.
Barney and Bonnie Hill were a couple that were abducted by aliens, and it's the most convincing encounter I've heard of. This one in particular freaked me the fuck out.
Well, this will freak you out as well, because the Man in Black informed Hopkins that he was correct, that Barney Hill did die in the not too distant past. But he says Barney didn't have a heart, just like you no longer have a coin. And the MIB gently suggested that Hopkins should destroy any material he had related to the UFO case. So he's saying, just like I can make this coin disappear, I can make your heart disappear, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, wait. Barney Hill died of, like, a fucking crazy heart thing.
He actually died of a cerebral hemorrhage.
I thought it was in his heart. No, she died of a heart attack.
She did, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Wow. Yeah,
if just like this coin, you just won't have a brainstem. I don't know.
I hate it. Yeah. Also, it just sounds like this guy wanted to take his money.
An extremely pale guy with no, like,
make this pencil.
It's Heath Ledger.
Aw, fucking RIP, dude.
Rest in peace, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone knows what RIP means. Thank you.
Rest in peace, yeah. Okay. It's an acronym. Anyway,
you said rest in peace like people didn't know what it meant.
Well, I thought you were just saying everybody knows. Not everyone.
RIP stands for rest in peace. Please continue.
Kyle, like, everyone knows that. Anyway.
Fuck off.
Hopkins, extremely shaken by the encounter, because why not?
Right.
He basically was like, all right, dude, and burned all of the files he had related to the case. Mm-hmm. And he had repeated phone troubles after the phone company said his line had been tampered with, maybe.
So this is after he destroyed all the files? Isn't that what they wanted him to do?
Right. Yeah, he destroyed all the files and he never saw the man again, but he was saying that he had like repeated phone troubles, maybe because the man in black tapped his phone line. I don't know.
Not sure about that one.
All right, but this one, I like this story better. The next story, we're going to see a photo. So pull up the photo on the drone.
Okay.
And describe to the cool friends what you see.
I've had enough of your shit, Trevor.
I love the photos.
I've had it up to here. What the fuck? Okay, so we see this.
I like the zoom in part.
We see this young lady with a bowl cut sitting in a field.
Someone's clearly someone's daughter. They're out for like a picnic.
This looks like in the 70s.
Yes.
And behind her, you see what looks like a beekeeper to me, or maybe an astronaut.
It's kind of metallic, I would say. Yeah,
so it's a person dressed all in white and wearing some sort of helmet. To me, it looks like a space helmet. Like, I don't see a face.
Ooh, space helmet. Ooh, you're getting warm. Anyway, that's a great description.
Thank you.
We're gonna keep it pulled up. I'll need more from you in a second.
Okay.
Jim Templeton was shocked to discover this figure in the background of a photo of his daughter. So Jim's just taking a photo, and then all of a sudden this just like pops up after he gets it developed.
Hate it. God, that's like fucking Insidious. Do you ever see those movies?
No, I don't want to. Okay. I don't want to be scared.
It's not like The Sixth Sense where he has the little wispy thing next to him in every picture, like the little light. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Where Toni Collette is like, oh my God, look at the picture.
What the hell?
Do you remember when we watched that movie? I brought this up on the podcast. You really don't remember it?
No, I do.
Wait, really? Wait, yeah, what is it? Do you remember it?
Look at my face, yeah.
Yeah, look at me. Look at my face.
That's what we used to say that all the time. Says.
Yeah, we used to say that all the time to each other.
Look at my face.
We don't do it. Look at me. Look at my face. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
But yeah, the figure was not in the camera's view when he took the photo, clearly. No. Nobody had any idea where it came from.
Well, it looks almost like someone has like a little picture of a person on a popsicle stick and is just like holding it.
Just like holding it up.
That's what it looks
like. Yeah, but like, describe the background of the photo. What is in the background?
She's in a field. It's like a grassy field, and she's very clearly like on an incline because the horizon is slanted.
Right.
And he's slanted, but not at the right angle. It's not a human angle. He looks like he's growing out of her head.
Or like floating. Like, yeah, honestly, it's very strange. In the background of the photo around her, if he wasn't there, it would just be sky. Mm. So it from this angle, it looks like someone like jumped up and tried to like click their heels like really high.
It's photobomb. This is the first photobomb.
It's the first photobomb. Alien photobomb. However, the film, whenever he had taken it, was verified as authentic by Kodak. After Jim was like basically scared and had the film verified as to like no one had been messing with him, his story went public. And not long after it went public, he was visited by two government agents in quotes, because we don't know what they are, who referred to themselves as Number 9 and Number 10. Sound familiar? It's the Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
They demanded to see the site of the photo and questioned Templeton about the event. When Templeton told them he didn't see the figure personally, the men became angry and stormed out of the field, never to be seen again. So he took them to the field and they were like, so did you see this guy? He's like, nah, it was just on my camera, dude.
What a fucking waste of time.
Did you read my article? God. Did you read my blog post? Anyway, Templeton was later contacted by two employees at a missile launch pad in Australia who had claimed that they saw two figures that resembled the man in his daughter's photo on the launch pad security footage.
Mm.
So apparently the missiles at that site in Australia had been produced like 20 miles away from the field where Templeton took the photo. So they got photobombed by like an extremely fast astronaut who was just like flying around.
A fastronaut
indeed. And you know what, we have another star-studded encounter.
Ooh.
With the Men in Black, and so this one comes from Dan Aykroyd.
Oh,
he has come forward with his story about how he was taping a show about the paranormal. And he had stepped out to take a phone call from Britney Spears, which, I mean, weird flex, but all right.
What a weird... Yeah. Yeah, I got a call from Brittany.
Yeah, so he got a call from Brittany, who was asking him to appear on Saturday Night Live with her when he noticed a black Ford parked across the street. Yeah, I don't know. Like, what does Dan Aykroyd do on Saturday Night Live with Britney Spears?
Right. That seems like a weird... And they're friends? That's the weirdest part about this story, is that they're friends.
I don't know. I just saw this. What? And I was like, why is Dan Aykroyd... That's anyway,
so strange.
So, who knows if he actually did Saturday Night Live with her, but I hope he did. But... There was a black Ford parked across the street. Yeah, you Google that.
They were across the street while he was on the phone with Brittany.
There was just a black Ford car, kind of like a government vehicle.
Do you think when she calls people and they answer, she goes, "It's Brittany, bitch"? Do you think?
Yeah, I think she does, but only after she released the song.
Oh, right. Well, what if she did that before and she was just waiting for it to catch on? And she's like, okay, enough people know about it now that it's going to be an iconic moment.
She had been trying to make it a thing for so long. And then she was like, you know what? I'm going to release a catchy song to make it a thing.
Okay. He had made numerous appearances on the show since leaving in 1979. He did not actually host until the 2002-2003 season finale with Beyonce.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's not the same thing.
So it wasn't Britney, it was Beyonce calling.
Yeah, turn down Britney for Beyonce. I don't know.
I get it. Okay.
Oh, you get it. Okay. So he noticed the black Ford parked across the street. A tall man stepped out of the Ford and stared him down.
Ooh.
Aykroyd turned away for a moment and turned back. You know, kind of like how you're like, I don't know if he's looking at me, so I'm just going to kind of like nervously like twist.
That's like at the stoplight. When
it's almost like a double take. Like, are you looking at me? About.
Yeah.
And then turned back to face the man. He also had, by the time he had like turned around and then turned back to make sure that see if the guy's actually looking at him, the man and the car had completely vanished.
But he didn't hear it drive away, I'm guessing.
No, I don't think so. Mm. After he had finished his phone call, so this is all the while on the phone with Britney Spears. He had returned to the
What are we doing?
This is according to Dan Aykroyd, man. You're gonna have to take it up with him. Well, this is according to an article that said that Dan Aykroyd said this. So, we'll have to, Dan, if you're out there, we'd love to have you on the podcast.
He's dead, buddy, isn't he?
I hope he's not.
John Belushi's dead.
I hope he's not.
I hope Dan Aykroyd's not dead.
Because then I'm inviting a spirit into my home.
Oh, no, he's alive. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah, he's got vodka and stuff. He's going to be all right. All right, so Dan, I would love to have some vodka with you from your crystal skull and, I don't know.
Yeah, let's talk about Brittany. If you could clear
this up, it'd be nice.
Yeah,
let's talk about Brittany. Anyway, and your encounter with the Men in Black, or if this is all horseshit, you can let us know. Anyway. Yeah, so after he finished his phone call, he returned into the studio that, you know, he was shooting his TV show about the paranormal. And his show had been canceled, and then he was ordered to stop filming immediately.
Oh.
Some doubt his claim, but Aykroyd says that he knew what he saw and maintains that there's some kind of connection between these Men in Blacks and the end of his paranormal show. So, like, he just appeared to him and then vanished, and then he walks in and his show's canceled. Like,
happened in the same.
Yeah, like, don't overstep your bounds or something.
But the thing he wasn't supposed to see was the Men in Black.
No, right? I'm thinking that, like, maybe on his paranormal show, he, like, had tapped into something people to see, yeah. But they didn't want people finding out. Or maybe he was, like,
that's the show he was doing.
Maybe he was making fun of something that was inherently alien, and maybe the aliens didn't like it, so they sent their little alien Men in Black down.
That does sound like Dan Aykroyd making
fun. I don't know.
Aliens.
But yeah, that's my case.
I would love to see that show. I hope that they...
Oh, the paranormal show?
With Dan Aykroyd.
it's just Ghost Hunters before Ghost Hunters was a thing.
Ghost Adventures?
Ghost Adventures, yeah.
Oh my god, what if it's just a sketch show where he works with John Belushi and John Belushi's ghost?
That could be kind of cool.
I would watch that. Anyway, so that's it? That's all you got for
me? That's all I got.
Wow, just buddy, good job. A little bit
on the Men in Black there.
Yeah, nicely done.
I'll probably reference it whenever we they inevitably come up in other things as we talk about, like, government conspiracies and stuff.
It makes way more sense that they work in the...
supposed to know, yeah, they come for you.
Well, we all know something we're not supposed to know. Something that they know that they're not supposed to know.
Well, you know, if you know about our podcast, then you're safe.
One of the podcasts I listen to is Wine and Crime. Mm-hmm. And they do these things called Coven Confessions, where they have their listeners write in and, like, tell, like, deep, dark secrets.
Ooh.
That they've had their whole lives. And it's so fucking funny. And I... So, like, one of them was, like... The example that came to mind was, like, someone killed their sister's hamster.
Oh,
by, yeah. And I don't remember... I don't know why I came up with that, because I don't think that that's actually a story that was on there. I think there's, I'm thinking of the Drake and Josh episode where they kill Megan's hamster by, or they stun it with the camera. Google, right. Friends, let me know if anyone knows what I'm talking about.
There's always, like, some sort of accidental hamster death involved. Oh, hamsters in everyone's life.
Always die in some crazy fucking, always die some crazy way.
Right.
Like,
hamsters don't die normally.
So the craziest hamster story I've ever heard was, since you asked, Trevor.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is my mom has a coworker whose daughter got a hamster for, like, Christmas or her birthday or something. Loved this hamster, was, like, obsessed. And she was on their, like, screen-in porch.
Yeah, weird thing to be obsessed about, but yeah.
Yeah, but she, well, you know how little kids are with their animals.
Oh, little kids, okay.
Would you think she was a grown-up?
Well, I thought you were talking about, like, the mom got a hamster for herself.
No, his little daughter, who was, like, 5 or 6.
I get you.
And they were on the screen and porch, and she was, like, playing with the hamster on the floor, and she, like, bent back and squished it by accident with her hand and killed it. And, like, the hamster, like, fucking exploded.
He
had to put his daughter in therapy.
Oh, yeah. Well, no.
And I
honestly, it is pretty traumatic to kill.
Craziest fucking story I've ever heard in my life.
Well, yeah. Like, think if you had, like, a little dog or something that you loved that much.
Yeah.
And you just, like, accidentally, like, I don't know, kick it or fall, like, step on it, and it just, like,
totally
squishes it or snaps its neck.
Yeah.
That'd be awful.
Can you imagine?
No, it'd be terrible.
Well,
that was a lovely story to end on. Just hamster combustion.
That's a good
fun, cool friends.
That's a good band name, Hamster Combustion. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And if you have any more great band names, you can send them to us.
Yes, band names.
Wheremurdermeetsmystery@gmail.com.
Also, follow us on Instagram @wheremurdermeetsmystery, and please, for the love of God, tell us your hamster stories. I really want to hear them. I love
honestly,
hamster stories.
Yeah. Everyone's got a hamster story. Everyone, or at least one that they've heard.
Story. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So anyway, cool friends, what a wild ride. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sticking around. And we will see you next week.
Yeah. And don't forget to call your dad.
Call your dad.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
I love you.